Cold Equation!
Hello, and welcome to the Cellarcast. On Sunday, the 18th of May, 2025, I'm your host, Dan Train. Joining me today, Zachary Burgess.
Heating up.
And Robert Kemp.
It's exothermic.
We are definitely exothermic in this tiny room.
You guys are, but not the weather in general. That's like pulling it from elsewhere, right? Surely.
Well, again, how, like, where do you define the black box around the system? That's the only thing that matters.
I mean,
what if you define it around the town?
What, do you think on average the whole of the town is exothermic or endothermic?
Yeah.
Presumably endo, right? Or...
No, I would say...
Am I thinking too much about just energy death at that point?
I mean, if you're limiting it to, like, the ins and outs of the whole system, it's got to be exothermic, presumably.
Hmm.
Probably less energy is going into the town than is coming back out as waste heat at any given moment.
Yeah.
Because of all the energy already contained inside the town.
I mean, if it wasn't radiating or it wasn't getting rid of the heat, it would just continue to heat up from the sun, wouldn't it? Until it...
I guess, yeah, like...
Too damn hot.
Presumably you're excluding the passage of heat to the air in some way and then from the air out of town.
We're not excluding anything. It's just where you're drawing the line.
Yeah. As you said, where is this box?
I would say inside the contents of on the surface of the box that contains an entire town, it's probably radiating heat on average more than absorbing heat on average.
Makes sense.
Do you reckon you could describe someone who's a bit of a charisma vampire as endothermic? Like, when their presence sucks all the joy from a room, it's like, are they an endotherm?
I think that's probably energy neutral, isn't it? I don't think any normal emotions have any particular higher or lower energy density.
I don't know, apathy...
That's what makes them so boring, right?
Apathy strikes me as quite low on the energy scale.
Yeah, but it's not apathy. You're disappointed at the fact that it's less good. Like, that's not apathy. He doesn't, the charisma vampire doesn't make you apathetic, he makes you annoyed.
Oh, no, sorry, yeah, I was just thinking more, I was addressing your statement more generally, but yeah, you're probably right in that instance.
Yes,
only I mean, I'm sure by the heat death of the universe, there'll be no Riz left. Everything will be very apathetic.
People still use just dead, like, it wouldn't be Riz, it would be dead.
Yeah.
No, I get. Or has that gone out of vogue? Is it?
I mean,
is it disvived?
As long as it's not Peng.
That was quite short lived, in fairness.
Yep.
Pengest munch.
Sure. No, that's like a London dialect. I think it had a life for a while, but it just meant not around your parts, your ends.
Maybe, yeah.
Let's say.
I mean, crepe, I think, has lasted a bit more than Peng. Crepe Jack.
Have you heard any of those phrases outside of those YouTube videos from the London person?
I think I have heard crepe in a couple of occasions. Like,
really?
Not... I wouldn't say in casual conversation, in, like, other videos, not necessarily of a London variety.
Right.
So I think that one at least spread. I have never heard a single person say Peng, except for us in this instance right now and the chicken connoisseur on his videos. Peng.
It's just one of those dialect things.
Where does that even come from? Like, is it just because penguins are cool? But, you know, you don't want to say penguin.
That would only be Rob's theory.
It comes from Pingu, yeah. Noot, noot.
Mate, that is so wah-wah.
It's Smiles enjoying Pingu yet?
I don't think he's ever seen Pingu, actually. I'm not quite sure where you would acquire Pingu.
Where would you get Pingu?
Except on, like, YouTube, buying a DVD or something. Yeah, well, maybe YouTube, actually. Probably someone's probably uploaded some stuff.
It's not just, like, one that's in a BBC archive or something at this point.
I don't know. Well, BBC
or something.
BBC are kind of crap with that, to be honest.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, you get one. They'll have one random thing that they have tons of, but it's just like, where's everything else?
Yeah, exactly. They're not like, well, Channel 4 are way so much better at that than the BBC, right? Like the well, I don't forget, what is it even called? 4 on demand? Oh, it used to be 4OD, right? I don't know what it's called now, like the 4 player or something, I don't know. But yeah, they are much, much better at making sure that their own shows are
You can
always
actually watch
there.
Based on there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Can you watch Garth Marenghi's Dark Place on 4?
Good question. I've never looked. But don't actually use 4 streaming all that much, but...
Mm.
But I think anything that they've done that is classed as a Channel 4 show, right, that they haven't just bought in, I think pretty much everything is there.
Friend of my ex-colleague is the head of UX at 4, not OG, whatever it's called.
It's fine as a player goes, it's just the problem with all the non-free, all the non-BBC... but free streaming services is that, you know, the ad-laden nature of them is almost more annoying than the actual television station, you know.
Mm.
Unskippable in their various forms. Also, I don't rate, like, I've tried to watch when ITV have been doing, like, sport on their their service, and streaming the quality thing, of watching sport on ITV streaming is poor. Or their catch-up services after the fact. It's not great.
The video quality.
Yeah, video quality's not there. There's something funky about it. Like, you know that thing, like, when you're, like, is it just me, like, when you're watching sport on a channel, like, it doesn't feel like it's limited by the standard 25 frames per second thing that, like, I think they must be using an interlaced format or something.
All right.
Like, I don't know, it just looks, the motion looks smoother, and like maybe that's just because the cameras they're using or something like that, but it doesn't, it just looks nicer. Mm. But when you're using ITV streaming, for example, you don't get that sort of smoother look to it. You don't, that just doesn't happen. So it looks quite choppy and, well, like you'd expect, British 25 frames per second, I suppose.
Hmm.
You can sometimes see it on iPlayer, like when it hasn't yet, like, what do they call that? That used to have a name, like when it upgraded the quality level of the stream you're watching. Let's call it progressive for now. It hasn't, like, gone from, like, the low quality to the high quality tier. You can sometimes see it gain that smoothness.
Like it's kind of de-throttling rather than throttling. Yeah. What's the best stream, like, quality? You think it's like, I think it's definitely reserved for certain shows and things, like, I don't know, Netflix, I'm sure, put a high quality copy out of, like, Stranger Things than they do.
Netflix.
I mean, in terms of compression.
Sure.
Because they claim it's like, hey, this is in 4K, and it's like, yeah, but the compression is quite... And I think iPlayer definitely does it for, it's the big nature documentaries that have the best picture quality.
Yeah, they're not bad. I think all of them... I don't know if I've ever seen any one of them not suffer from black crunch in some way.
Yeah.
Even the ones
it's kind of annoying when you have like a crazy OLED panel or whatever.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You and crunched up all the blacks.
It's still like, a bit funky.
Point. Yeah.
Clair Obscur Expedition 33 actually came under fire from that a bit recently. This is a podcast about video games. Because it's like it uses pre-rendered video for some of its scenes, but it's but you can tell because the compression's not great, which is a shame.
Yeah,
but yeah, black crunch is a problem with all of them. I think Disney's all right, you know, when it's their own stuff and it's a 4K one. I think that's okay.
I'm currently trying to decide what to get on physical media because I have a PlayStation 5, so it's like I might as well have some. It supports Ultra HD 4K Blu-ray, which definitely has a better quality than streaming.
Sure.
And the only one I had since I got the PS5 has been the Lord of the Rings films, which is definitely the priority.
Right, yeah.
But I was like, what's actually worth having? So this week I got The Matrix.
Sweet.
Just the first one. Mad Max Fury Road. And Terminator 2 Judgment Day. They were my picks. Because it was like I was like, where do you even buy these? And Amazon is terrible for it, actually. I ended up on HMV, and they had like a three buy three cheaper offer or something.
Right, yeah.
Those three. I haven't tried them yet, but it needs to be something that's worth it, right?
Yeah. 4K films are a kind of a weird entity to me. There's something I don't really fully understand there, because they're not mastered in 4K, or the special effects and stuff aren't. Sorry, that's maybe not the right term. The special effects and stuff aren't often rendered in 4K because it's still pretty expensive to do.
Sure.
So they're like scaled in some way or blur filtered in some way to make it look filmic. I don't know. They have a technique there, but maybe
that's where Fury Road is good, because it's mostly practical stunts. Filmed on, must be digital filmed on, I don't think.
Sure.
It's filmed on film, right?
Yeah,
but yeah. But yeah, and then obviously graded and everything, but presumably that is like mostly 4K quality for that reason.
Yeah, maybe we've got there to that point. Maybe I'm a bit out of date, but it wasn't that long ago that places were still working in 4K as their baseline.
I'm guessing the original Matrix will not have 4K.
No, but that was at least still film.
Yes.
Right. Well, so
great. When it's just a film shot, it's going to look great.
Yeah. So I guess most of the, it was theatrically re-released in 4K, right? That was that was the thing you and I tried to get to, right? Because they were actually put it out, but it was only in cinemas, right? And so I don't know quite what they did to do that or put that together. Like, is it just they ran a master of the film back through a capturer, but now that those capturers are that digitization process is better, and then do some touch up later once it's digitized. Like what? Mm. Like how much effort did they go to? Is I guess what I'm saying. Because I remember when like HD first became a thing, and like a lot of the, I remember like some of the films I watched were just like, okay, this is definitely better, but what I'm getting out of this is fidelity of film grain.
Yeah, but 35mm film goes up to like, I don't know, it's above 4K, isn't it? It's between 4 and 6K or something, theoretically. Although it's a bit weird because it's not, obviously it's to do with the sizes of the crystals in the grain of the chemicals of the thing. But yeah, I think it can go higher than 4K. And that's 35mm film. Some things are in 70mm, aren't they?
Insane epics. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like at the time, like I wonder if that, again, part of the digitization process back then to HD DVD or Blu-ray or whatever, like where it just like really showed up film grain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which was fine. It was a style. Still impressive.
Kind of miss film grain sometimes at the cinema. Don't see it anymore.
Yeah.
Especially when they put it as an effect in video games for no fucking reason.
Didn't Mass Effect have a film grain filter of all things?
Yeah.
That's almost the weirdest one to me,
yeah,
right?
Quite a weird one, yeah. I guess they were trying to go cinematic, quote unquote.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Slightly odd. Hard sci-fi with the pretty good cutting edge graphics for the time, I suppose, and we'll put a film grain on it. It's just weird, just a weird mix. If they did it to like Elder Scrolls or something, like maybe that's a bit more acceptable, like because of the fantasy setting, I guess.
That makes equally as little sense.
Yeah.
You're not gonna have a film camera in either of those cases.
Westerns, Red Dead with film grain. Probably okay.
Yeah, probably.
GTA 6. Oh, topical.
We're going into news already.
Maybe.
There we go. Grand Theft Auto 6. There was another trailer after they... what happened? Like, last... We got in last time with the news that it was delayed, but before they dropped the second trailer, which was only like a day or something.
Yeah, it was a very quick turnaround. It just...
Yeah.
Yeah, they got that new trailer out, which, in their own words, is equal parts gameplay and cinematics. It's very much not. It's almost entirely cinematic. It's gotta be cinematic. Unless there's, like, as Zach pointed out before the show, it's like, unless there's all, like, quick time events they're hiding in these scenes, like, press X to not give a fuck. I don't know. So it all supposedly rendered in real time on a PS5. Not base PS5, not Pro.
None of your pros, going on.
Exactly. 30 frames per second. I think they, like, pixel count.
As every previous game, yeah.
Yeah, but they've not really... I don't think they're hitting the 4K target or anything like that. Like, I can't remember what Digital Foundry said about that. But anyway, it's still pretty impressive looking, let's be honest. It's like the fidelity of this thing is...
completely insane.
Yeah.
It looks unbelievable. It looks better than I don't know, because, you know, it's hard to guess from, like... because you have to ignore all other games and sort of see the trajectory from, like, GTA 5 to Red Dead 2 and extrapolate that, I guess. And I guess it makes sense in terms of that trajectory. How many years has it been since Red Dead 2? Seven years?
Yeah.
So maybe it is on a trajectory with that. But Red Dead 2 still looks like one of the best games out there. It is that old. So this, I don't know. It looks great. It looks better than I thought, even based on the previous trailers and everything I knew about the game so far.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is not necessarily down to graphical prowess in the traditional sense. I think we've always said this about GTA and Rockstar in general. It is art direction and pure detail in that detail, sense of the word, yeah. Right? They look at every single possible thing how can we touch that up without necessarily pushing using tech to try and get around those.
It's true. I mean, the thing that makes the big difference, which all modern games are doing now, but the thing that makes a difference in terms of Rockstar games is the ray trace global illumination, right?
Sure, yeah.
That's the thing that they never had before. And obviously, every game is... obviously, Indiana Jones was probably the best-looking game of the last year, and Doom the Dark Angel, same engine or whatever.
Yeah, Avowed's using it as well.
So it's pretty normal now thanks to... And Unreal Engine obviously has it with Lumen and stuff, but it's just like... It really makes a massive difference. I'm not saying it's, like, special that they're doing it, but, I mean, they're doing it in a... You know, not that, like, obviously those games are doing them in a, well, Avowed, for example. I don't know. It's not even unique doing it in an open world game necessarily. Mm. But this is just, like, the biggest.
Well, it depends. Sure, and Forza Motorsport as well, right? That was one of their big things.
It depends, like, how they're going to manage the open world aspect in the engine, because, like, when they were talking, the Satisfactory devs were talking about when they upgraded to Unreal Engine 5 and turned on Lumen and Nanite and whatever, and they were like, the way the world loads in chunks in our game kind of wasn't compatible with that, and we had to do a whole bunch of work to make it function at all.
Then
we're not really supporting Lumen. It's just something you can turn on if you want to.
Yeah, because I wonder how it's done. Like, presumably it doesn't you calculate, like, real-time GI across everything you can see all the time. Like, I wonder if it's, like, faked or baked to a certain point in the distance, and then it's like reverts to an old technique. So, because you can still occasionally, even in Avowed, I think, like, that's like the LOD management is pretty great in that, but like every now and then you can see, like, a lighting effect appear at distance.
And obviously, and like, the open world, as much as you call this an open world, in Avowed isn't really that big.
No, but I mean, they're pretty big environments, but it's not like, one continuous, enormous environment like GTA is going to be, right?
I mean, I would have said those Avowed areas are, like, I don't know, not even a quarter of the size of any GTA city.
Yeah, not even, yeah.
Yeah.
Not even.
They must have been planning this, like, technically for, like, 10 years, basically. This
sure.
What's come off here in terms of the technology of making it work. And then, as you note, we've passed the point where it's, like, John Carmack can make a better engine or whatever, and that, you know, it's now about, like, not just the art direction, but, like, the amount of, you know, detail that you can put in if you have essentially infinite money
to spend on it, presumably a ridiculous amount of hard disk space.
Well, we'll see. I mean, Rocket 2 somehow fits on a PS5, which is weird. Maybe they'll do, I mean, I doubt it, but, you know, they could do, like, Flight Simulator, and you don't even have it all downloaded.
Oh, wow,
streams. But I doubt it.
No, I don't think they'll do that.
But, you know, that is probably in the future of games like this, but probably not right now.
The thing that worries me, right, is, like, a Call of Duty install these days, right, is hundreds and hundreds of gigabytes, right? And that's nowhere near the scope of this thing, right? Yeah, technically. Indeed. So the amount of assets that you're going to need.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, what would that mean if it was double the size of Red Dead 2? That would take up half your PS5, right? Base PS5.
Yeah, I was about to say, if it was double Call of Duty, we're talking like 500 gig. We're getting into that range.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. But man, it looks so cool.
Yeah. It's neat. Like, I did watch the Digital Foundry breakdown on how they think some of the shots are being done. Things like that, and there's some fun stuff in there. There is a bunch of ray tracing going on, that, you know, that sometimes subtly and sometimes more overtly, like the shot where there's an awful lot going on is the one where he's just driving Jason. Is just driving his car, and it's a side on shot. There's reflections off his. The window nearest you, there's reflections off the window furthest away from you, there's reflections off the back window, there's reflections off the front window, there's reflections off his watch, there's reflections in the wing mirror, there's reflections that they sort of picked out also on DF, like some sort of lighting or perhaps shininess that they think might be environmentally controlled on bits inside the car. Like, and is all of that fully ray traced or faked in some way? It's real interesting because that's an awful lot of projection mapping or camera map. One of the reflection techniques that used to be used for things like in racing games and stuff like that, they would literally have other cameras facing the directions in the game world, and they would use that to then project onto a texture to do some of those effects. And they might still be doing that, but there's a lot of that going on. So that'd be a lot of cameras.
I don't think they're going to do a huge... I know they have the infinite resources or whatever, but I don't think they're going to do a huge amount of special tricks for cutscenes.
You see, I disagree with that. I think they're doing a lot.
I've never seen that before. So I think that maybe for the trailer, but I think it's very unlikely for the actual game that they will like have heavy tricks like that.
In-game, as in the world, no, they're not going to be doing that. That's not the point. But we haven't really seen in-game. We've only really seen... cinematics, it wouldn't be unprecedented. Games like Uncharted and plenty of others, like where there's, especially when there's characters and scenes involving them, they would be doing trickery with lighting and to highlight key lights in particular. It wouldn't be unheard of for them to be doing cutscene trickery. And in fact, DF go into some detail about it, or they have some theories about what they might be doing, especially on lighting. But also, like, there's one scene near the start of the trailer where there's that guy gets out of his truck, and they were examining just how nice the collar shadow is on his neck,
right?
Like, and it's just like that looks so good.
By the way,
wondering like how that is, if that is actually real time rendering that shadow that well, or if it's like a baked asset they've put on just because of the way he stands out of the car and because he's kind of always facing you during those camera cuts, like whether that could be faked in some way. And it's like,
it could be. That was one of the strengths of like GTA 5 or whatever. It's like it has all the LODs and everything, but they have the resources to like make lots of really good LODs at lots of different levels.
Sure,
you know that, and which other games couldn't do. You can only do like 3 levels of LOD or whatever, and you have to use tool assisted. Whereas they were like handcrafting bits of the city at different levels of detail, right? Like that's the way it works or whatever. They just
I think it's one of those things that definitely 3D engines have been able to do that for a long time, and in fact they probably have had to be handcrafted at some points in time, but
you need a lot to make it handcrafted.
I would say in more recent times that stuff would have been tool assisted, but the ability to do it by hand would have been there if you put it in. And Rockstar are like one of the few companies that could pay for it to be done by hand.
Yeah, exactly. and have it directed to work well.
Yeah. Exactly.
By the way, that guy, that particular guy with the collar or whatever, people are saying it sounds like, because none of the casting's announced, but people are saying that sounds like Stephen Root. And I think it really does. And that is exciting because I love that guy. I think he would be brilliant as like a main side character in a GTA game. Because, yeah, I don't think he's been doing anything since he was in Barry and he was awesome in that. Do you know the guy? I mean, he's literally, I believe he ever played Steve Blue, that guy.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a character actor. He's in loads of stuff and he's always brill. He was in like True Blood and all kinds of things. But like, I'm quite excited. I think that's him. I think he's going to be in this. So that'll be cool.
That would be neat. Yeah.
His character's like a drug runner from the Leonida Keys instead of the Florida Keys.
Oh, do we know that much? Like,
yeah, because that's the trailer, they did launch a web page, which is a fancy web page, fancier than an Apple web page, I would say, in terms of scrolly effects. Yeah, there's some extra detail. There's even a character that's not in the trailer that's on that web page.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Fun. But yeah, looks real sharp. I mean, it's a typical Rockstar trailer where I wouldn't necessarily say it particularly sets a mood of... maybe that's all it does, actually. Sorry, the other way around. Like, all it's really doing is setting mood and not necessarily anything at all about anything.
Yeah.
You know, we don't really know exactly what's going on. We know you're probably playing as those two beachwear models.
Definitely those two.
But that's kind of all we know. We don't know a great deal else. Like, the only real story snippet we know is that she, and I can't remember her name, was in prison for a bit and now isn't. And
Lucia.
And then
Jason.
And shenanigans are about to begin, of some description. That's kind of all we know. But that's Rockstar always do that. That is their formula. They don't tell you anything. And
one thing that worries me slightly is there's clearly some corrupt cops. In that story, right? Did you see that in the trailer too?
Well, I guess I didn't pay too much attention, but
right, okay, fair enough. And I didn't like that. GTA 5 is like you're constantly working for these asshole, like, whatever government agency guys and just doing all their dirty work. Yeah, whatever.
Technically, that's Red Dead 1 as well, right?
Is this becoming a
Rockstar? Is this becoming a Rockstar thing?
Yeah, I'm hoping. That isn't the case this time, but we'll see.
Maybe you're not. I bet you're bound to encounter it because it's just one of those things where it's like the world is so big and presumably the threads are going to be large. So there will be at least one, but whether or not it's a thing, you know, like an important thing, I guess we still don't know.
Yeah,
I mean that was one of the other things where there was that scene in that trailer where, again, to go a bit technical again, where they were looking at, you're talking to someone behind reinforced glass, presumably in a police station or something. There's that, you know, they were talking to some guy there and they were like, oh yeah, there are some corners being cut in these scenes because there's no like active shadowing going on his keyboard and stuff. It's like,
oh man, who cares?
I know, but they were looking at it going like, okay, look, this is how it's like, this probably isn't a bull shot. You know what I mean? They were trying to like reinforce it as look, there are actually limitations on show here.
For sure.
And like the wing mirrors in that car I mentioned earlier, there's some temporal artifacting going on that in what is actually, for again, they pointed out throughout the rest of the trailer, pretty clean in terms of that stuff. Like whatever they're using to do their you know, anti-aliasing or is pretty good because Red Dead even Red Dead 2, I think definitely suffered from some gnarly temporal effects in places. But yeah, this looks a lot cleaner generally.
Good news.
Mm.
I think the cumulative effect is it looks awesome from what I can tell.
Sure. I mean, and a technical feat if it actually really does look like that on a PS5.
Yeah.
Very impressive. But let's hold. We should definitely, as good as that looks, we still haven't really seen the game.
That's the same every time.
Yeah. Still haven't really seen the game, so we don't know how much of that it does in the world.
I feel like Red Dead 2 might have gone through a kind of, instead of being like everyone loved it and then they were like gone off it over time, I think that like it was a bit cautious on launch in some ways. I think because it was, especially story-wise, it was quite heavy and stuff. But I think that might have kind of grown almost in a,
I don't know. I think it's lasted in the sense that, I mean, it definitely, like, you know, said visually and stylish, it's managed to hold that style for longer than most games could dream of.
Yeah, but that's true.
I don't know if I feel like sentiment on that hasn't really changed. The people that hated it still hate it. The people that like it still like it.
Yes, maybe you're right.
Some games I would be in there with you, but this I think is just held, which is also kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. Anyway, looking forward to it. Exciting times. Not the only game out there, but it's a big one.
It's a big one. The biggest.
And I'm pleased I don't have to get a PlayStation Pro or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just get ready to lose that £100 or whatever.
Well, whatever. That'd be easily worth it compared to other forms of entertainment for that kind of amount of stuff.
Yeah, if I hold your interest for that long. Anyway, I think that's my problem. Like, you know, long game theory to a point. It's like, it could still be the best thing in the world, but can it hold me for hundreds of hours? Not many games can these days.
Got quite a lot out of Zelda,
right? Yeah, as I said,
didn't finish it.
No, I still haven't finished it. That's what I mean. Not many games can. Fair.
If it's not Yakuza, I'm not having it.
On some level, and even then, I don't like go super deep on that. I go pretty deep, but not all the way. There's always more in those than I could possibly hope to do. Anyway, that's GTA news. What else we got? In news nobody cares about, Square Enix cancelled a Kingdom Hearts game.
Whoa.
I mean, Kingdom Hearts is pretty big, I suppose, but like...
Well,
but
did they mean a real Kingdom Hearts game or a goofy spin-off Kingdom Hearts game?
The latter. They were apparently working on something to challenge Pokemon Go or do something in that sort of space. It was a mobile GPS-driven, some sort of thing that they were calling Missing Link.
Because for a moment there, I was imagining like a Dragon Quest. No, what kind of game is this? What's it called again?
Kingdom Hearts is kind of
Kingdom Hearts.
It's kind of an action RPG, right? Sort of.
Yeah, but I was imagining Kingdom Hearts, but with the you know, Final Fantasy VII remake.
Oh,
engine.
That kind of treatment.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been some like screenshots turning up of Kingdom Hearts 4, which isn't released yet, and is supposedly in development. But supposedly saying that Mickey Mouse is finally going to be a playable character in those games. Mm. But those shots don't look very. That shot doesn't look very good. So whether or not it's leaked or made up, no one really knows. I'm not sure I know, but anyway, I'm not a Kingdom Hearts guy. The only thing that's weird about this, right, is that this spin-off was supposedly in development for like approaching 6 years at this point, and they still just didn't think to put it out the door. They were like, no, we can't figure out how to make this live service-y enough. God damn it.
Okay.
What a waste of time. What else we got? Switch 2 news, of course.
Woo!
Let's get the pricing stuff out of the way, because that's everyone's favourite. The Switch 2 price is set to remain at $450 for launch, at the very least, in the US, as it stands right now. Doug Bowser basically insinuates that that may not necessarily be true, but can't give any specifics, past launch. I mean, so, if expect Switch 2 prices to potentially go up pretty soon.
like the Andy ambassador from the 3DS.
Yeah.
You don't get some free stuff because the price went down. You get to pay more.
Yeah. So yeah, kind of a bummer, but I guess it's they're still trying to see how the whole tariff situation plays out. Just holding their cards to their chest, I suppose. We already know that, you know, or there's been some, it was already suggested that the rises on game prices and the accessory prices were tariff related, but they're kind of makes sense that they might want to hold back on doing the console itself unless necessary. They want people in the ecosystem, right? That's that old problem.
Yeah, the old loss leader.
Yeah, except although nobody except Nintendo nobody doesn't... lost leads anymore.
No.
So there's that. Warner Brothers has basically stepped up to say, yes, we're going to be doing Switch 2 edition upgrades for games. Officially announcing Hogwarts Legacy is going to be a $10 update if you have the presumably terrible Switch 1 version and want to make that be slightly bearable. And Civ 7 will also get Switch 2 upgrades, which might be slightly more egregious, I don't know, because it's like, what are you really updating?
Well, they
apart from mouse control. Yeah,
they kind of already had to do that upgrade.
Yeah.
Just to make the mouse work.
So there you go. I mean, I guess that's reasonable, right? If... probably better than Sega not doing it.
Well, I think you could have got away with it on something like Civ 7 because it's just like it's literally only just come out. Like, I don't think it matters very much when it's a game that's only just like 1 or 2 months come out before the release of the console.
I know, but it would still suck if you bought the Switch 1 version and then couldn't.
Well, that's just like any time you buy something and then it goes on sale or whatever. It's yeah. Like, it's not really that different,
I guess. I always think it matters more if the game's just come out. It's like, well, why aren't you updating your very recent thing to the
version? It's not, they're not making a patch, basically, is what they're actually not doing. They are making the better version. They're just not making a special patch that you buy separately.
Yeah. I mean, it is a patch. It's just a paid for patch. But I mean, like, instead of releasing it as a completely separate, like, here, pay us the $80. Now you've got your Switch 2 version, and the two things being completely separate entities, like what Sega are doing with Sonic X Shadow. That's what I mean. Like this is better than that, right? By a million miles. So yeah, there's that. Journalists and people doing what we do of some with more worth will be they won't be getting their Switch 2s ahead of launch. So it goes. The review units aren't being shipped out ahead of time. So don't expect day one Switch 2 review coverage.
Well, no, you can still get day one Switch 2 review coverage because I've pre-ordered them.
But yeah, but it'll be hot coverage, right? They won't have had time to settle down and really write a solid review. It will be, hot takes, I suppose.
Yeah, but does anyone really spend that long writing a review any longer? Is there branches that do that any longer?
I'd like to think so, but but maybe you're right. I'd like to hope that's how things are done. Do it properly. Yeah, Nintendo blamed this on the fact that they don't want people reviewing the console without a important day one patch.
Right, okay.
So how hot is this thing, right? Like, have they been manufacturing them with...
I do remember that Breath of the Wild patch, like, really helped. Like,
oh, yeah, it was, like, essential.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not a good console-level patch.
No,
that was a game patch,
yeah.
I mean, technically, it was a game patch that fixed a very specific console level thing with like the RAM overloading or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder if they've got a similar issue that they've only discovered late or something. Or all the servers won't be up to deliver whatever patch
that's probably true,
yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe.
And chances are the servers are going to get destroyed immediately anyway as everyone tries the game chat.
Yeah. You'd hope they'd be running on slightly separate systems, that the firmware download system isn't the game chat system.
It's Nintendo, so probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that. Let's talk about the T's and C's for Switch 1. That's kind of... No, actually, let's come back to that, because game chat is Switch 2. We'll come back to Switch 1. Yeah, game chat signups. In order to use game chat, you need to have registered a telephone number with Nintendo for some reason. And that seems to be, like, annoying people. I don't know. When you sign up to stuff, they always ask for, like, your name and address and all that kind of jazz. Anyway, Nintendo probably have my phone number already in my, like, Nintendo account level. Like, is this new? I honestly don't know. I guess it must be. Otherwise, we wouldn't be reporting on it. But
I mean, the only thing that's weird about it is that, like, having that required implies certain things about, like, maybe it's not locked to friend codes like we initially speculated. Maybe it is going to be just, like, literal public chat.
No. That seems like such an un-Nintendo thing to allow.
Well, yeah. But otherwise, what do they want your phone number for?
What do they want it for regardless?
Well, you have to have... I think traditionally the idea of it would be like a phone number is basically an age gate. Except that's not really true any longer.
That's not true, yeah.
But I'm sure Nintendo probably thinks it is.
I mean, maybe to some extent, at least. It could be, I don't know, unless they're verifying those phone numbers somehow, like maybe there's a two-factor thing, like they send you a text. Maybe it's a way of limiting accounts being created ad infinitum, something like that. Stop you from making fake accounts for some nefarious theme.
I mean, I don't even know what the... Because you can't... I'm trying to think of, like, how the Nintendo accounts actually work, because it's been so long since we did that for, like, the Switch 1. But, like, it's linked to the system when you create your account, right? Because that's the whole problem of recovering accounts with the Switch, if you lose it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Giant pain in the ass. But then you can still make other accounts on that. They're just not real accounts. Like, you can make a secondary account on the Switch, but it's not, like, an account.
Yeah, they're, like, profiles within the account.
So, like, it's still only one real profile per system, so is that just, like, the implication that that's just, like, essentially the parental one, and that's why it's going to have the phone number and everything, and then all the sub-accounts are then...
Well, yeah, unless they're planning on linking it to your phone through the Nintendo app through a phone number for ease...
Well, sure.
...instead of... Using your Nintendo account login.
Then that would be optional. Sure.
That's quite weird in its own way.
If they want to two-factor it that way, then that would be an optional thing, right? You get the app, you link it to your Nintendo account, and they don't actually need your phone number, really. Because it's on the phone and it's linked to the Nintendo account.
Yeah, exactly. They don't need your number for that. Yes.
So yeah, I don't know.
It is a bit weird.
It's we'll weird see. That it's I'm specific sure... to game chat as well.
Like, yeah.
Well, if it was just like, in order to use Nintendo Online, you need your phone number, then, like, sure. But, like, the fact that they said it's specific to game chat, unless they just foolishly said that and didn't imply that it actually is, like, for the whole of the online.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's almost the weirdest part of this whole thing, because you need a Nintendo Online account, or will do, in a year's time, right, to even access game chat.
Maybe that's why they got the phone number. Maybe the phone number is the because it's not going to be, because you're not going to be paying for online in that pre phase, but they still wanted to have some amount of, like, like consumer protection or whatever. If it's not linked to your credit card or whatever, what else are they going to link it to? Oh, we'll use a phone number instead.
So it is for, at least on some level, it is for text message verification. It is a two-factor of some description. Sorry, I just had to look it up. Very professional. Should have done this before the show. We're so pro. Yeah, it is at the very least for some sort of two-factory stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you...
Oh, here we go. Some confirmation. Only friends can be invited. So it's not outside of your friends list. Verification by text message. Reporting offensive content. Not sure why that needs your phone number, but there is at least a... If someone has made you uncomfortable, Sonic says, get out of there.
Yeah. I think I saw that they were implying that there was like another terms of service thing somewhere that was implying that Nintendo is just going to monitor this whole thing. Like, not just like reporting offensive content, like Nintendo is just going to be listening.
Ugh. Well, that would be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what you're going to need phone verification for. Unless it's just a like special parental controls thing. Like, since you're not going to have a Nintendo Online account, and therefore you're not going to have to be locked into like an actual account, basically.
But you don't need an online account, you just need a Nintendo account. It just needs to not be a subscribing online account.
Sure, but then you're theoretically you could get a regular Nintendo account with much less, you know, direct personal information or whatever. You don't need to put in a credit card or a phone number, presumably.
No. I mean, like, what do you need to do to get onto your Switch in the first place, right? Like, or to get to the eShop? Even you don't need to register a credit card up front, right, to access the eShop or the news page or whatever, but you probably do still need a Nintendo account to some level.
Yeah, but that's just like an email account, essentially.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing if they want to... If they're
Which
going
makes
to allow
something kind of weird, like, why not just associate people, it with that?
Well, yeah. If you're going to allow people to use Game Chat for free, and therefore with this minimum Nintendo account, but you still want parental controls,
but you've got a Nintendo account for that. Just log into your Nintendo the same account on the phone to get the parental app synced that way. Like, it feels I don't know. I don't understand why they need it, but there's ways and means to do that without a number, and two factor shouldn't be. There's plenty of ways to do two-factor that don't require a phone number.
Well, what if you don't have an app?
An authenticator. Well, yeah, you have options. That's how I'd like...
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. If you don't have the Nintendo app, then they need to authenticate some other way, which is why you have the two-factor.
The but then why would you be number? Using a phone? Like, yeah, I mean, as I say, there's plenty of ways.
I mean, I literally will not be able to run the Nintendo app on my phone.
Oh, I mean, that's true. Yeah. Unless Game Chat is entirely separate, and it's a completely separate login for some reason.
I mean, I guess it could
highly unlikely.
You'd hope
make an external Game Chat app that's just like running Discord on your PC.
Yeah. Finally, Nintendo have quietly changed the terms and conditions for Switch 1 owners, suggesting that modifications of any kind to the console, software's running on it, blah, 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 basically gives Nintendo the right to brick your device. Which seems a bit hardcore. And I'm not 100% sure. I haven't really seen... I would have thought, like, if they showed you something like that and been like, yeah, your device may just stop working, or we might decide to make it not work if we find you to be running a mod, however they detect that, can they even do that? Like, is that... Aren't I allowed to play with the devices I own? It's a bit weird.
I mean, I feel like I don't know why it's come up now, but I feel like I've heard about something like this like over half a year ago, because I saw a YouTuber who played... Well, I guess it's not technically Switch, because he was playing modded Breath of the Wild on PC, but like it's basically the same thing, where it's like, I can't really make videos of this any longer, because there's too much risk that Nintendo's just going to come kill me, or whatever.
It does seem a bit nuts. Like, I don't know if I've ever heard of it quite like that before. Like, you break T's OCs and you get banned from an online service. Fine, right? That's pretty standard practice. But to actually kill the device?
I mean, killing your account effectively kills the device on a Switch anyway.
Well, no, you can still put cartridges. If it was fully offline, right, you could still put cartridges in and play games.
Not without an account. Not without a functional account that starts
up. Is that true? Like, does it just, like, if you have a Switch out of the box...
Every time you start a game, it asks you what account you're using. So oh, but that's... the account is then blocked from being able to be used at all.
I don't know that you necessarily need to have an online account. Like, when you first get a Switch out of the box, do you actually need to go online? Like, make a profile on the device, sure, but do you actually need to sign into anything before it will let you run a cartridge?
I don't know.
Exactly. I can't remember. It's been too long, right?
Like, well, I mean, we wouldn't have done that anyway, right?
Well, I mean, we wouldn't, no, because we'd have signed into our account.
Like, well, but I mean, I'm pretty sure the first boot sequence definitely gets you immediately connected to Wi-Fi, right?
Sure.
As part of that setup process.
Yeah.
So you kind of can't avoid going online.
I mean, I guess you could. Like, if you're using it, that must be skippable. Like, if you presumably have started up somewhere that doesn't have Wi-Fi.
Maybe.
Unless it's not. Unless it is enforced. I honestly can't remember. But
that's all kind of moot anyway, because like what we're talking about is not starting up a completely fresh Switch out of the box in a place where you have no internet. We're talking about someone's already got a Nintendo account connected and then does something.
Well, presumably that's the only way they could track who and what's switched to do it. But yeah, if it was fully offline and you went and modded it and it stayed offline and never touched Nintendo servers, what are they going to do? It doesn't change that.
Yes.
If you're a fool, foolish enough to put some kind of piracy mod on your device and connect to Nintendo servers, that's how accounts traditionally got banned. but yeah, they still wouldn't have like taken down your device historically. That's what I mean by like, that's the first I think I've heard of it going that far.
Oh. Well.
Weird times. If anyone can probably fight it in court, it's Nintendo. That's all I really got for news.
All the news going on.
Eurovision happened. It was bland.
I heard that Fortnite is banned from the App Store again.
Oh, wait, what? How?
I mean, it's a massive legal battle, right? Wasn't it?
Sure,
but,
yeah. It ended in Apple's defeat, ultimately. Apple basically told they can't stop people from suggesting you use something other than an Apple payment mechanism to pay for their games, right? There's like, they're not allowed to force that anymore, which was Epic's whole deal, right? It's like, well, we don't want to pay you a cut. Like, if people just sign up through Epic, they should just be able to use what they've already paid for. And of course, that means Epic just keep the cut, right? Which is obviously what they're after. But they lost all of that, so it technically shouldn't break Apple's term or revised terms of service to deal with this to put Fortnite on an Apple device. So what are they claiming now?
Well, Fortnite is saying Apple has blocked our Fortnite submission, so we cannot release to the US App Store or to the Epic Game Store for iOS in the EU. So Fortnite on iOS will be offline worldwide until Apple unblocks it. Then Apple have said they asked Epic Sweden to resubmit the app update without including the US storefront of the App Store so as to not impact Fortnite in other geographies.
I'm not sure I fully understand that.
Apple's trying to say that it's something to do with, it's like a storefront issue or something, rather than anything to do with the previous lawsuit.
Left the US storefront in all the versions, like even the European version, but then that would block it from the US version.
That would be a weird. What do they even mean by that? Like, you don't put the Apple storefront in the game, and
the Epic storefront, presumably.
But why would Apple care at that point?
I mean, who knows? Presumably,
the whole part of this thing. Okay, yes, there's weird and wonderful tax stuff you kind of have to do, like being an online retailer, right? And that will vary globally. So is there something weird, like, if it accesses a US payment provider like Epic's store, as you, if we call it the store in this case,
maybe they,
like from somewhere non-US, like is that problematic? Surely it's not Apple's problem at that point. That's like, well, maybe, Epic's problem to be legal.
Maybe they're trying to not let people use VPNs to circumvent pricing. Like if they've included a non-region specific version of the store in the store. App that's in the other region, so you could potentially access the other prices.
Oh right. So if you're running a VPN in Australia, but that VPN is US bound, the device itself isn't going to stop you.
Yeah,
but then that's true of using a web browser. Even on an Apple device, that's true. Sure, you could still do that.
This could just be another case of like Fortnite being the biggest target and just being the one that Apple has picked on to start complaining about.
Yeah, that's a weird...
Because that's what happened last time, basically.
That's a weird thing for them to get hung up on, but they've obviously got a beef at this point.
Yeah.
Because it just wouldn't be Apple's problem legally at that point. It would be Epic's problem to make sure that's all above board. Weird.
Well, yeah. Currently it's blocked, so we'll see if it comes back and whether there's more lawsuits or whatever the hell is going on.
Oh, I bet there will be. Yeah. I bet this isn't over.
Must be very disruptive if you actually want to play Fortnite.
Depends how they manage that kind of patching thing, I guess.
It's not like you can't play it on any other device in existence.
Yeah, it's true.
This is like, how much do I know about Fortnite? Does Fortnite even have crossplay technically?
Yeah, fully crossplay. Yeah.
Even with the mobile version.
Even with mobile. It's the same game, ultimately.
I was just thinking about what could be the server situation. Like, could they, if the updates can't go out for the iOS version, could you have a separate like server for that, essentially?
I mean, again, wouldn't be unprecedented. That kind of stuff is well known for like Chinese market versions of games, right? Like,
and I mean, theoretically, on the back end, you could even just do it silently. Like, crossplay could just be turned off for a while, and then you could just run the old version iOS servers for people connecting from iOS, and no one would be able to tell because the server would populate the same.
Sure. Yeah, probably. I mean, except you might not be able to play with your mates anymore.
Well, sure.
Well,
fascinating.
Indeed.
Fascinating speculation by us who don't know anything about this news story at all.
Well, it's news that you can't play Fortnite on iOS, so that's the practical upshot.
I think it is a shame that they don't just reconcile their differences.
Is it a shame, or is it not? I don't know. It doesn't really matter either way.
It kind of is.
Get corporations to fight. It's always good.
Yeah, exactly. More fights.
And
that's the news.
Maybe two big companies. Maybe that's okay. If it was like Apple versus a little tiddler.
Obviously.
Then it's bad. Apple's walled garden should fall. Embrace the Google way. No, don't embrace the Google way.
That's why you have to have Epic fight them.
Yeah.
If you want that kind of thing to happen.
But I don't,
even if we don't like Epic either. So a fight has to happen on some level.
I wonder how much this is costing Epic. Like, not just in the law legal fees, I mean, but like how much money they could have had by it being on iOS.
Well, presumably, theoretically, less than the cut, because that would be the whole... Financially, you would have made that assessment.
Sure, but this has been going on a while, right? Like, what if they just capitulated to Apple's demands? Do you know what I mean? It's that sort of like oh, fine, we just did it. It's like, they were big enough to have the fight, but...
It's not a continuous expense any longer. They got done with the legal fight.
Yeah, but they're still not on Apple, right? So technically, if you want to argue, if it was someone's only way of playing Fortnite, which probably isn't because it's everywhere, are they missing out on monies from players not being able to play on Apple is what I mean. Like, because their reach isn't as necessarily as large as they would have wanted it to be. But they've sacrificed that platform for this amount of time. Like, how much has that actually realistically cost them?
What do you mean? I thought it was back on Apple since the lawsuit. That was the whole point.
No, but it's not.
It's not now.
No.
Because it's gone down.
Did it ever go back on, Dan? Like, even so, that's not a lot of money. But no, I mean, I didn't mean just these last couple of weeks. I mean throughout this whole damn lawsuit, which has been years.
Yeah, but that's,
right?
That finished like a year ago. They got done with that whole lawsuit.
But it still took years. And during that time,
yeah, and then
how
I'm
much
saying,
money would they have lost of just saying, you know what, Apple, it's fine.
Yeah,
we'll
and
put
I'm
it,
saying
we'll
they probably
the
did that calculation and said the 30% extra we get from not paying the Apple tariffs is worth this much amount of time spending in the legal procedure.
Which is not what I'm asking. I just want to know how much. That's all I was asking. Not anyway, you read too deep. Yeah, read too deep.
I think that's the same question.
No, not really.
All right, are we done with news for this week?
Sure. Okay, yeah, I got much else. I think there's much else happening.
Let's talk about what you're playing.
It's all lulling before SGF's not far away, so that's the next thing.
What's that?
Summer Game Fest.
Is that a Microsoft thing?
No, that's Jeff Keighley's big thing. It's the
E3
of
the theoretical
today.
Trigger for everyone right. else to do an E3-esque thing.
They're not E3.
Yes.
Okay. Well, fine. See what comes out then. I feel like we've got all the good stuff with Switch 2 anyway.
Yeah, like they're coming out just slightly ahead of the E3 period.
Yeah. Anyway, video games, which of them have you been playing, Zachary Burgess?
Only like a couple, but I finished Avowed, got through that.
Oh, wow. Okay, I wasn't expecting that.
I thought I was going to, I was getting too close to falling off it, and I was like, I just have to commit to doing this.
Huh. So did you just mainline it in the end, or?
Well, no, I still did everything. I just did it fast.
Still did everything. Jeez.
Well, it's because I went back in with the intention of just, you know, doing some long sessions and getting through it. But then, as I went into the new area, I kind of realized that when I started fighting stuff, I was like, I kind of realized that I had started, I guess, getting ahead of the power curve, and then I was just like, oh, I can just run through all these battles. There's no challenge to this any longer. Like, I walked into the new area, wandered off. Like, I should have realized by the time that I'm in, like, the fourth area of the game that, like, you should follow the main quest slightly to trigger the thing that tells you to go to the town. And then,
sure, yeah.
I should have remembered that you should have done that, but I just wandered off immediately.
Of course.
So I ran into one of the bounties. And even though it was rated as, like, 2 skulls danger or whatever, 2 out of 3, it was just like, oh, this is no problem.
Right, yeah.
I was like, oh, this game is not actually any threat any longer.
Well, the one near the start of Galloway's Tusks, presumably you're talking about,
yeah.
Like, that wasn't, yeah, that was weirdly easy, I thought.
Well, I'm sure it depends on, like, your build and stuff.
But then it wasn't far away from where you start that area, so, well, yeah. Like, I guess maybe it was easy because it's like, oh, I've just accidentally run into this fight.
But also, I mean, from that point onwards, as I continued to play it, I was just like, oh, I was like, as long as I'm not getting hit, because obviously, you know, most of the time I'm worried about having Kai tank stuff, or when he's not in the team, it's just like, I just have to slightly more maneuver around, but like, as long as I don't get hit, it's fine. And I basically, from that point on, almost never used any of my skills. I was just like, just shooting the gun.
Wow.
It's like, this is more than enough.
Yeah, I mean,
it was assisted slightly by the fact that once I got to like the level 20 skills, where the last tier of gun upgrades is just like, it effectively doubles the amount of stun you do. So it's like, well, I was one-shotting all the weaker enemies, like wizards or whatever, but then anything heavier, it's just like, you do 2 shots, it stuns them, and then you do the uber shot, and then they die. It's just like, this is not actually a problem.
Sounds like you're... loadout at that level, maybe that loadout is way more effective than mine, because I'm pretty capable, but not like that capable where it's like only a couple shots. Like, it still takes quite a bit of battering to get things down. But I'm not a very I haven't got a lot of health, right? Like, I'm quite a I'm a light class, so I'm glass cannoning essentially, but my cannon doesn't feel that all that powerful. Even now
I mean, my thing was like the whole, all the way through, I was playing basically fully on crit boosts. Although I'm not entirely sure, I could never work out because I could like never pay close enough attention to the damage numbers or whatever. It's like, does having boosted crits even matter when I'm only doing headshots? Because aren't those automatically crits?
Oh, wow. Yeah, good point.
Boost crit damage?
Sure.
Sure, but like, does the crit percentage matter in any way if I'm only doing headshots regardless?
Don't know.
Apart from on those rare enemies that don't have weak points, even though they should.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not a thing really with the wizard because you don't have control of that there because they're all homing shots.
Yeah. But yeah, once I got into that, once I realised it was just like, oh, this is actually real easy. I'll just run through this. Don't even really bother, like, even trying to get the stealth start of a fight any longer. Just run up to everyone. I don't even care. Just shoot them.
Yeah, it never seemed a particularly great use of your time anyway, trying to stealth stuff. Like, you get one guy out of the field, maybe.
And even with the, because I got all the bonuses for that you get in the sniper tree where it's like you get an extra 75% damage or whatever on the first shot. It's like that doesn't one shot heavy enemies.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm one shotting the light enemies anyway, so that bonus doesn't actually help. But yeah, and you know, as I got that higher level of stun and started seeing the power, the like stun shot more or whatever, I realized how ridiculously overpowered that is as well. Because like the stupid thing about it is that the gun doesn't need to be loaded. Like, you'll fire a shot that stuns someone, then you just click again and immediately do the power shot. You don't even need to do the reload sequence.
Right, that's weird. I didn't even realise the guns had an ammo system, to be fair.
Well, I mean, it's a musket, so you have to reload after every shot.
Oh, okay.
Basically. But yeah, you just, the power shot doesn't count. You just fire it anyway. And then it became even more stupid because obviously I have the arquebus where I have like the bullets ricochet, that's its special ability. So it's like you stun one enemy, you immediately do the power shot, but the power shot ricochets and stuns another guy, so you just do another power shot. And it's like you can just fire off like 3 shots before you reload because you can just keep chaining power shots together. So yeah, at that point I was just like, yep, I'm not even using any of my other skills. I'm just using the gun, and that's all I need.
I feel like I can't, because of the way the wizard works, right? I don't have the ability to just make me that potent.
No,
because
you don't. There's no like base attack. You're always using one of the skills, and it depends on what book you've got.
Yeah, if you're using the skills,
yeah,
right, or even the grimoire, yeah. Even if you're using those, like, but the most of the tree is like, oh, you can invest like up to 3 points in that one skill,
yeah.
But there's nothing like extra that you can then really do around that. So it's like, and if you're playing like me, well, I haven't really changed my skill set particularly since finding a grimoire near the start of the game that I quite liked. I haven't really found any like more interesting grimoires for a while, like for a really long time actually. So it's I can unlock, I think, one of the level 20 spells if I want to. But I just haven't wanted to. I unlocked a couple of level 15 spells just to mix it up for a bit and be like, okay, what are these like? Don't really use them because they're level 1 variants of them, right? They're not all that interesting. So I just end up using my wand, which has like, as you say, it has a ricochet effect. It has an AoE effect. It has pretty high accumulation of whatever status effect your wand is.
Yeah, I guess
I don't do a lot else other than, you know, be suddenly good. That's the other problem. It is quite glass cannon in the sense I can be suddenly quite nice to suddenly very bad in a very short space of time. And if it does get bad, because my healing is either potions or spell casting, like the spell casting could be like, I was in the middle of casting my heal and then I got hit again and died.
Right.
Or interrupted. That's the worst. Like, hits, getting hit interrupts your spell casting, so you can feel a little bit vulnerable if it gets bad.
I mean, I think that's probably the other problem with the gun build, is that, like, I basically, because I'm not using any of my skills, I'm not using essence, and because I'm not right. even in the fight, I'm not using stamina. So I'm like, I basically don't have any resources to worry about the whole time.
Right.
Because I, like, even the amount of time you spend charging the charge shot on the gun, which does drain stamina while you're aiming, it's just like, that stamina comes back immediately, because it's not like I'm blocking, holding a shield or anything, and I'm not constantly draining stamina. It's only, the only other use for it is if I need to dodge.
Yeah, I think we talked about it before, but the thing that's getting me the most about Avowed is just the lack of variety.
Yeah.
It's quite one note, and there just aren't that many things to fight.
No.
And it's not... And they don't really do anything interesting. Like, even the hardcore variants of them, they're not like bespoke bosses or anything. They're just like, this is a slightly tougher one of those.
Yeah.
It's like, there's not enough.
I mean, there's no, like, yeah, they could have put in some more of the, like, traditional MMO things, you know, with, like, hit zones and stuff. Things you actually have to dodge specifically, rather than it just being, here's a melee guy who's run up next to me, so I better dodge.
Yeah, I better dodge. Or is there some, like, yeah, pattern to them or some trick to them that I need to know? Okay, there was... mild spoilers, but there was one fight where I'd managed to whittle down a guy quite a long way down his health bar, but then one of the others would heal it to full.
That's just like, and it's like, you have to just kill the priest first.
Yeah, but then it wasn't just to kill the priest, it was kill him quickly because he can self heal as well. Sure. In that particular fight, and it's like, okay, this is actually the toughest fight I've encountered in the whole game so far, but because it had a speed element to it that has never been a thing before, but it's like, it was kind of at least noteworthy because of that, right? It's like, oh, actually, no, I do need to kill that guy and make sure all my damage is going to that guy as quickly as humanly possible, otherwise I boned here. Although it took me a little while to figure out which one was that guy as well in that particular fight. It wasn't super obvious. It would just sort of happen. Because it wasn't healing all the time, right? It was right. Like, oh, what, someone's about to die. I better do my mega heal. It's lacking in that department. It's lacking in... like, the combat... That's not to say the combat is bad. It's just... I think it just... needs some juice. You know, it needs something for you to get, like, hype about occasionally, or...
Well, yeah, I feel like that was where they should... At least with the bounties that could have been more like boss enemies, that would be the chance to have, like, actual patterns and multiple phases. Like, make them invincible for a while and then make them do a fancy deck, like how the dreadnoughts work in Derg, where, like, sure. They'll have a pause where they become literally invulnerable while they do a thing.
And it's like, okay, now I've got to think about evasion and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Or maybe use the opportunity to perhaps do some prep for what's
and
about to happen.
And obviously the other thing that they could have done to make the combat more interesting would be to, like, you know, make the elemental stuff actually matter in any way.
Yeah.
Are you sure? Occasionally... Well,
there's some resistances going on. But yeah,
you're never going to notice them.
But they're never hugely... Even those that... When you think, like, oh, it's a fire blight or whatever, I'm going to use my blizzards from the sky. And it's like, seems pretty effective, but not, like...
massively more than anything else.
Yeah, not world-endingly effective. Yeah.
And there's, like... when I did eventually switch the, like, totem bonuses right at the end to one of the other ones, so I didn't have the fire bonus any longer.
Oh, I've switched to the third totem.
Right.
From the first.
But, like, when I switched and it's like, then people randomly started getting frozen and I was like, what the hell's going on? Oh, right, yeah. I'm not doing fire any longer. Ice now.
Something else is happening, yeah.
But it makes no real difference. Like, occasionally you'll get the shatter bonus, but then... everyone to me is dying in two shots anyway, so it's not really that different.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. Yeah. I'm just for reference, like, I'm, let's say I'm in the second half of Galloway's tusks,
the north half.
Yeah, the north bit.
Yes.
So I guess I'm not too far away.
And then the ending sucks. But no spoilers for Rob.
But do you think it sucks because of the like possibility of variation in the ending, or is it you know, because of your choices along the way, if there are any?
It's hard to tell.
Did your ending suck? I think is what I guess what I'm trying to say.
Like, well, I mean, yeah, the way. Well, I don't think it would have been any better if it had ended the potentially opposite way from the way I ended it. But like,
cause, yeah, because it's clearly boiling towards two. There's two obvious routes the path can take.
Yeah, but it's like, well, I mean, the main problem with how I ended it specifically, which I feel like is. Would there'd be an element of this even in the opposite way, but like the it leaves a giant plot hole for one thing, and it's also quite abrupt. It just ends.
Oh, all right.
Because there's a
I'm
lot-
not sure I thought much else. In fact, it's fair. Like I guess because Outer Worlds was a little bit like that as well, as in there wasn't too much of an end to that.
Well, the trouble is like. It's that theoretically the story should be like super dramatic and everything because like you're building up to freeing this god or whatever, and then, like that kind of seems like a big deal, but then it just kind of stops. The game just is done, and I don't know if that's like some indication that maybe they ran out of time or something or budget.
Maybe,
but you know that kind of made the ending seem kind of weak compared to the stakes. But anyway,
interesting.
No additional spoilers for Rob, I guess.
Yeah, I wonder how mine will play out. I'm almost certain that the way my playthrough feels at the moment, whatever I do, it's going to feel like a mistake.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that seems to be my general feeling of my character at the moment. He just bumbles through the world making countless errors.
Well, I feel like in the third-born error in this last area, before the garden, I guess, but like it's. I feel like you don't have as many good options any longer. It's like, no matter what you do, it's going to be sucky.
No, like the end of Shatterscarp. That is a pretty sucky choice.
And also not really a choice. Because, like, who's going to go with the other half of that choice? That's my other problem with this game, is, like, it Mass Effect has, like, Paragon and Renegade, and this game has Paragon and Complete Arsehole. It's like, it's not cool to be the bad guy in this game, judging by any of the...
But it's
text
not even
choices.
Paragon half the time.
Well, yeah,
it's just
medium Paragon.
It's like Lapdog versus Asshole, I think.
Lapdog most of the time, because you're explicitly going against the Empire's, like...
I guess, yeah, to some extent.
...goals in most of the time. It's more like neutral and complete Asshole, but, like, I can't imagine what it would be like to play through on, like, fully on the Steel Garot side. Because I did look at the achievements, and it's like, oh, you can have... There's the achievement for, like, becoming a literal member of the Steel Garot, and there's the achievement for all your party members leaving because you joined the Steel Garot.
All your party members can leave?
Apparently, according to the achievement.
What?
So it's like... It sounds like quite a different playthrough, but I don't think you'd enjoy it. It sounds like you'd have to be a right dick all the time.
Maybe it's like a self-imposed hard mode-ish, or...
Yeah, I suppose.
Weird. I wish some of this stuff was just more, like, some of these big ideas, or not necessarily big ideas, but some of these, like, consequential things felt more impactful more often. Because, they're, like, hearing that even exists is cool to me, but I don't feel like I'm really seeing any of that possibility on
my
playthrough. Until I didn't even realise Fiora Messiverno, for instance,
right.
Like, that whole thing we talked about a couple episodes ago. Spoilers. But yeah, that whole thing was optional. It didn't feel even remotely optional to me, like, until you said, no, there's a way to avoid that. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I wish the game had a better way of exposing, or at least making you feel like you were making impactful choices.
Well, I mean, that is kind of the problem of just, like, the good path is, like, normal. You just think of, like, you're going through it, it's like, oh, this seems like a perfectly ordinary story, and then that then hides all these bad options, which are much more dramatic theoretically,
yeah, and possibly more interesting. are we just too normal? Is that what we're saying?
Are we just old and have played too many video games at this point, so we don't understand how video game stories work.
and we've inadvertently made sure we've played the boring route.
But as I said, it's like, I don't think I like being a complete asshole the whole time.
No. Be assholes to assholes.
Yeah, sure.
That's kind of fun.
I mean, it was cleverly written, wasn't it? The renegade stuff in them.
Yeah.
To tempt you, even if you're playing the Paragon run. Like, with certain situations where it was like someone's like running his mouth and it's like flashing the renegade option repeatedly.
Sometimes for really extended.
Was obviously that was the joke.
But
the whole point of renegade was that you weren't an asshole. You were just, you know, hardcore.
Yeah, hardcore badass.
You just used your fists more than your brain, was how I read that. Yeah.
Whereas in this case, I don't think there's that. It doesn't feel like that. I mean, admittedly, I haven't seen how any of those situations turn out. I've only seen the top level dialogue choices or whatever, but
sure,
most of them don't seem like it would be good. And I guess no spoilers technically, but like right at when you get to the last section of the game. They just dump a shit ton of unique items on you, which only serves to even more highlight the fact that, like, there's not enough of them, and they're giving them all to you right at the end of the game, where you don't get a chance to use any of them.
Weird choice. Is it, like, because they're giving you, like, an end-game weapon, one of each type, or something?
Essentially, kind of.
Weird.
And there's also that also applies to, like, the last godlike skill. I literally forgot to use it, and then the game ended.
Yeah, that's a kind of that's probably like a indicative that you might have a problem somewhere. Like, even because the leveling is kind of weird in that game, like the gear leveling.
Yeah.
I haven't really mixed it up very often. I haven't really felt the compulsion to mix it up very often. I don't know. I don't often find weapons that have interesting.
Well, I mean, that's the problem. Uniqueness to it. Like, once you find. And because there's a limited number of each type of unique, it's like, I did get, like, one more unique arquebuse, and I tried it for, like, one fight, and I was just like, this is as good as the ricochet, so sure. I just went back. Like, that's...
I think I ballsed up once, because there's a spear you can get that when you powered it, it would fire poison darts.
Right.
So it had a projectile and a spear-like action. But what I didn't realise was when I enchanted it,
it removes the base.
It removed the base ability. The other option would have kept that base ability but made it better. But I went the other way and was like, no, I'd rather have this secondary effect, thinking that the two would apply.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then when I realized it didn't, it's like, oh, I've permanently cocked this up, haven't I?
It's also kind of weird that in a few of the cases of that unique upgrade, it seems like the base version is just the best. Like, both of the upgrades suck. Why would you want either of those over the base one?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. That game, you know.
It's pretty good.
Once I got to this last era and realised that I was ahead of the power curve or whatever, I was just like, well, this has now just become... The fights have become pretty irrelevant. I'll just grind through it and get it done.
Also, I don't think I mentioned it before, but it makes me cringe every single time Yahtzee in the middle of a fight goes, "Slay!"
I mean, it's just a one less, another one less.
I know, but it's like, it's so, like, current lingo. Slay.
And then once Rob finishes it, we can talk about the whole ending spoilers and stuff, because there's some other things that I guess I still want to talk about in that, but and the actual ending, how it actually ends.
Okay, maybe we'll have a spoiler segment. A proper one.
We never worry about spoilers, because by the time we finish playing a game, chances are everyone else already has.
Yeah, there's always a chance.
Especially if it's Rob.
There's always a chance. We're normally quite late to games. I would anticipate other people are later.
Some other people, sure. And then the other thing that I played... Well, I did play some more Dwarf Fortress before, like, last week, but that kind of started to fall off as I remembered all the problems I had with it. No. Like, yep, this is still Dwarf Fortress. In some ways, I'd still rather be playing the previous ASCII version. So that, but then the only other real thing I played this week was that big patch for Captain of Industry came out. Started playing that again. Actually, there was also a big patch for Timberborn as well, but I'm like, can't do two of these at once. So
That's the beaver.
That's
one,
the beaver
right?
one.
Right. Yeah.
Can't do two of these at once. So I was just like, I'm going to go to Captain of Industry, I guess. But yeah, the Captain of Industry has introduced, well, several weirdly spaced out things. It's added the new end game where, like, they've extended it past the rocket launch to so that now you just make a whole space station. So now you have to launch multiple rockets. And, you know, do, like, constant supply missions or whatever to keep the space station functional. And then that also leads into the like, super end game of getting infinite resources by deorbiting asteroids. Which is helpfully, you know, they've built it into their terrain manipulation system where you just, like, you choose the place to put the asteroid and it essentially just creates a new mountain full of resources that you can then dig out using the normal terrain manipulation that the game has. So, you know, that's probably funny, but that's a long way away still, because right. I've started a new run, obviously.
Standard.
So there's that, but then the other big feature is trains, I guess. And as part of that, they re-edited all the maps to make them generally bigger and upgraded the engine to allow them to be generally bigger. And added one new map, which is exceptionally big, which is like, here's the train map. You're going to need trains for this one. So that's the one I'm playing on, obviously.
Oh, so I can't build another truck.
Well, you can always build another truck.
Build another truck.
But you might want to build a train instead, and then build another train. They only cost slightly more than twice as much fuel as a truck.
Can I build a land train?
No, weirdly. I feel like that would have been a logical upgrade to most of the trucks in that in that game. Some heavier multi-stage truck.
Land train's the right way to say that, isn't yes. it? Even though it's such a, like, trains generally run on land. But land trains are just unrailed land.
Yes. And I think maybe the rails are, in fact, kind of the problem of the trains. The balance is a bit ridiculous. Like, building the rails themselves is incredibly expensive, and maybe that is sort of balanced in that, like, you're investing in this long-term infrastructure, basically.
Sure.
That's going to potentially be used by a lot of trains, not just, like, one train, if you design it well enough.
It arguably makes more sense than most industry games making you build the roads between towns, right?
Well, except now you, in terms of industry, because of the paving system, you kind of are doing that as well. Mm. You're paving the areas where the trucks drive the most.
Oh, right, to make them, make them more efficient or less damaging or something.
Less maintenance cost is what the bonus from the paving. But yeah, the cost of making the rails is... And also the other problem with actually physically building the rails is... You want to go from, like, one end of the island to the other with this railway. Well, trucks still have to deliver all the materials to build that rail. So you're still going to have, all of your trucks are suddenly going to have a lot of delivery jobs for a long time, and it's going to completely fuck up your whole logistics system for, like, several minutes as all the trucks have to do all these other deliveries. Huh. Like, I feel like they need a... Well, in... There's a mod in Factorio that allows you to basically make a train that builds the tracks in front of it as you drive it.
Okay, that's
so you can just casually drive along and that it lays a track out as you go.
That's kind of fun.
Which is pretty cool. But, like, I'm not sure you need that necessarily. But I think they could just make a better... What you really want is basically, like, a construction site, right? Like, you don't want to deliver to each individual piece of rail. You want to deliver to, like, a central location and then have, like, one truck or something deliver it as the rail gets built or something along those lines.
Which is presumably how it's
done in real life.
You're
a staging yard where you bring all the stuff.
And then they actually use a train over the rails they've already laid, yeah. right? Like, or some...
construction vehicle that can mount on the rails.
A mine cart. Yeah, you know, with a big handle.
Yeah, I just feel like it would be better if they could centralize that a bit instead of having to, like, have all your trucks pathfinder each individual piece of the rail. And also it's not done very efficiently either, because the rails are actually kind of realistic in that, like, they could only have certain gradients and certain widths of turn or whatever, they're much less, like, locked to the grid like most of the stuff is. I mean, the grid in Captain of Industry is small, basically, it's hard to, you have the terrain manipulation grid for like building ramps or whatever and dumping earth into shapes for building ramps and that kind of stuff and digging out the land. And then, so that's like the biggest grid. And then when you're building belts or buildings or whatever, they're on a grid that's like a quarter of that. So each tile grid is like 16 small squares or whatever. And so the railways are on the 16 square grid. So they're like quite freeform in terms of like how you can place them and because of their like corners and everything. But then due to that, they're also made of a lot of small individual parts in the engine, essentially. So like,
right, so each, like, maybe each little 16th is,
yeah, it can go down to like literally a straight 16th width piece of track counts as one unit. And then because of the way deliveries for construction works, that requires an individual truck to bring like one unit of gravel and one unit of steel to it, instead of like a longer section of track where it might be like 60 units of gravel and 60 units of steel.
Oh, wow. So it gets worse during curves.
Yeah, it gets worse the more complicated the layout of the track is, essentially.
Huh.
Like, it needs, it'd be nice if it could batch that a bit better, basically, so that the trucks actually don't drive around with, like, one thing on them.
Depends how big the truck is.
Well, the trucks can carry 60 of a thing.
Oh, okay. And that's some bad logistics.
Yep. Basically. And that's why I was also...
Which is unusual, weird for a logistics game. Yeah.
I mean, they're normally pretty good about that kind of thing, but it's just this train system, which is why I also would have said, like, the idea of a staging yard type thing, where you bring all the resources there, because then you guarantee that you're going to bring full truckloads at once.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it does.
But yeah, that could be something that they'll just...
The truck should drive it to one place, and then they hire an Uber to drive it to the actual...
Basically. Or, you know, you could just build everything with Unity, I guess. The classic idea of that game where you can fast build things using the special resource called Unity, where it just instantly teleports all the materials to the place.
So, Love and Peace built a railway?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Okay. When you said, like, build it in Unity, a bit of me was like, what, hack the engine?
Yeah, kind of. But yeah, anyway, so you build the rails and then you get the trains. It does... I haven't got very far into the train system. Like, I only just managed to get one point-to-point rail going, and then I just barely managed to branch it off into a second train station to run a second train on it once I figured out the weird, like, how you can get multiple trains to run on one train track. Because... unlike Factorio and all these other kinds of games, it doesn't have any, like, signalling. It just does everything automatically. And, you know, they claim it will just work it out. And I hope it will, because otherwise these trains are going to get stuck. Because I've tried to make a, like, it's a single point-to-point railway rail that then, theoretically, I want two trains running on. So, like, I've built a passing place in the middle, so theoretically they can get past each other if they're going in the opposite directions. But the way you do that, I'm not sure... I don't really fully understand the system, so I think I've got it right. But so when you lay the rail down, you can set its direction. And if you set it as bi-directional rail... it then also gets tagged as zone exclusive. So, like, only one train can be on this bit of track at a time. But when I did that, I set it up so that, like, there's the branch where there's the station at the end. So, like, surely when the first train goes into its station, then that whole bit of track should no longer be occupied, right? So the second train should be able to go onto that. But it didn't work like that. I had to, like, unexclusive the rail, and that theoretically might mean both those trains can go on it at the same time and then they'll run into each other, but maybe it's smart enough to figure that out. Maybe that's not what exclusive actually means.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, I don't know about that. And then
is it like how many trains can be in that one tile?
Kind of.
Not necessarily on that route.
There's the marking for exclusive where only one train can be in that segment of track, but there's also the marking for non-stop where... a train can't go into this bit of track unless there's a place for it to stop at the other end, which I think that's how you solve the bi-directional thing, is you turn it off exclusive, but turn it on non-stop. So then only...
So they'll only enter it if they can get out.
Get to the other end right. In one shot. I think that's how that should work.
Hmm.
But I haven't really had these trains running long enough to see if it is going to fuck it up at some point. When they collide, when the pathfinding happens at the same moment or whatever. I don't think they'll explode. I think they'll just stop.
No, that's a shame.
Also, another problem is like, I don't think you can edit trains after you've built them, which kind of sucks. You just have to send them to the depot and then disassemble them and then build a new one, which costs materials because you don't get all the materials back.
Weird.
That seems like an oversight. They just need an update to that UI so you can like drag the wagons around or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, especially if you're not like having to demolish and rebuild your wagons. Perhaps you need like a wagon store.
Like, yeah, exactly.
So, like, you're like, it's like, oh no, I've still got these wagons from trains that I haven't used before, but now I need a train to do that.
Yeah. Like, that's how I would have imagined it would have worked, because that's how it works in like Transport Tycoon or whatever.
Sure.
You just put them in the depot and store them there for later.
Yeah.
And there also doesn't seem to be a way to tell the train to go into the depot, which is weird. Because, like, so you build the train in the depot, and then you set it on its route, and then it goes out. But there's no way to tell it to go back to the depot, even though the depot specifically has, like, an inbound door that you have to connect with tracks. Like, there's an outbound door and an inbound door, and it's marked with, like, no entry or whatever on the outbound door.
Wait, so how do you even... If you were to want to disassemble it, then...
You just push the button that uses Unity to teleport it into there.
Ugh.
And I'm just like, that's... Surely there's a bit of UI missing here, right?
That can't be right.
Yeah. I don't know.
That can't be right.
Because the weird thing about that specific button is when you recover a truck that's stuck with Unity, it just teleports back to the vehicle depot and then comes out again. But in the train's case, there's a specific drop-down inside that menu where you can choose whether to make it stay in the depot when you recover it or reset onto its route.
Or to begin, yeah.
So, like, that's there specifically to make it so you can get the train into the depot and stay there, but then you can't manipulate the train when it's in the depot. All you can do is send it out. You can just have it wait there for a minute, I guess? I guess there is actually one way that the train will use that inbound door on the depot, which is if you send them to the depot to get disassembled.
Right, that's why, okay. But so you can do that?
Yes, you can press the button that will send them to the depot to get dismantled, and then they'll pathfind to the depot.
Okay, fine.
Presumably, I haven't actually seen that happen. But then why is...
So that makes sense, yeah. So there's no point to sending it to the depot because there's no edit.
Yeah, because there's no edit. But then that problem is flipped, where it's like, why is there the option to have it paused in the depot then if you Unity it into the depot? Because there's no reason for it to be there.
Yeah. Unless, I guess it depends on how you've organized your rail network, I suppose. Maybe the depot is a useful place to just have it begin again from.
Yeah, possibly.
To untangle a problem, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. If you've screwed something up and then you fix it and then reset the trains.
Mm.
But yeah, and then it also tries to do other fancy things, like the train stations are smarter, where like if you have a train that has a bunch of carriages that can carry a class of item, I guess, like loose material, like which is like all the ores and stuff, you can have one loader and the train will like park in front of it as it loads each individual car, so you only have to have one loading point no matter how long the train is. It will just take longer to load
because the train will just keep shifting.
So if you want to speed it up, then you can build multiple ones, and then the train will stop in the correct layout to fill everything up quicker.
Sure. Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
So that's kind of nice. But also, I screwed up my first attempt at building these stations because of that. I was like, oh yeah, wait, I don't have to do it like I'm playing Transport Tycoon old school. I can play it like I'm doing Transport Tycoon modern, where your trains can be longer than the station.
Hmm.
Although you do have to then like build... like extra rail out the back of the station to account for how long the train is.
Right. Yeah.
When it's parked in all these different positions.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like a pretty fancy system, and you have to do level crossings for your vehicles to go over the tracks.
Do you have to like configure the trains so that like you know, it has announcements so that people move down to where the platform actually is? It's like the last set of doors will not open.
Yeah, fortunately, no down. People, please no transporting train. People around.
Oh, okay.
Only cargo. Sorry. Cargo doesn't care.
Okay, no problem then.
Wow, so someone's got to get it.
And they also allow you to
hence the train shoveling.
Yes. They also allow you to run the trains in reverse, so you don't have to worry about double heading. They just move slower if they're going backwards.
Mm.
Or, well, it's weird. They don't fully go slower. It's like they have less force if they're going backwards. So if it's a very short train, it can go just as fast backwards as forwards. But if it's only,
it just doesn't accelerate to up to top speed as fast, is what you said.
Yeah, but then once you get a certain number of wagons, it's like the literal top speed then also gets cut off.
Right.
And you can just put as many engines in there as you want, you know, if you need some extra force. And the rail system has, like, you can toggle how steep the gradient you want is. So if you want to make a real shallow hill to make it easier to get up, it will use more space, but you can do that.
Hmm.
Or you can toggle it to the steep version. And just have them crawl up there. But yeah, it's quite a fancy system. And there's a whole new UI and stuff, which is somewhat getting used to. And I feel like it's one of those situations where there's just slightly too much empty space between everything.
Right, yeah.
It's not super bad, but it's slightly there. It's like this UI window could be a bit smaller.
So it's not Windows 11 start menu bad.
No, not quite. And also I had to turn off like the brushed glass transparency immediately.
Oh, really? Do you not like that? Or does it just run badly somehow?
No, it was like, so people complained about it for accessibility reasons, which is when like the first patch after this patch came out was when they introduced the ability to turn it off.
I agree there should be an opacity or setting of some description.
But then like I just didn't like, I don't know, I just didn't like how it looked. Also, it doesn't get used very much. It's like it's only on the build hotbar and like your side stats. Like none of the other windows have it.
I was reading a thing the other day where it's like there's hacks and stuff you can do to Windows 11 to essentially make more windows use the I'm going to call it the aero glass because it's essentially what it is.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, apply that to most surfaces in the Windows UI.
Why would you
like have your entire Explorer window just be glass? Like,
no, not do that.
Yeah, it seemed a bit much.
Aero was bad enough by itself at the time.
Aero wasn't that bad. I mean, it's aged poorly, but it wasn't that bad.
Sure. But yeah, apart from that, Captain Ministry is substantially... Well, it's substantially the same, but there, you know, there was quite a lot of balance work in this patch as well. Just like smaller things for the early mid-game. Balancing like... when cooling towers no longer require a person to run them.
Wow.
Which I guess sort of makes sense.
Well, like power stations.
Yes, power stations, right. Cooling towers.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they are just a concrete cylinder.
Yeah. Although I think maybe they went too far on that because they also apparently don't need maintenance any longer, which is, everything in that game needs maintenance. That's kind of the whole balancing of the maintenance system, but apparently cooling towers don't any longer for some reason.
They are forever.
I mean, I'm sure it would have only been like a tiny amount of maintenance regardless, but you know, it all stacks up.
Have to get a concretioner out.
Well, they also got rid of bricks and replaced it purely with concrete, because concrete used to be like the second step after bricks. Like you'd make bricks with dirt in the early game, but now they've basically got rid of bricks as a resource, and now it's all concrete.
So you kind of, bricks are superior to concrete for some things.
Yeah, you'd think so. They could have maybe kept it as like a specific use case, but. Now you just have to get into limestone mining immediately, I guess, to start making concrete. They slightly upgraded the amount of concrete you start with, so you don't have to... It's not quite so bad as having to mine limestone immediately. You have a little bit of leeway. But yeah, getting through that, maybe I'll get to the space program, maybe. There's also a lot of extra fucking late-game steps now. they've added like aluminium and titanium or tungsten. I forget which one. One of those. But like, there's a whole another two smelting processes that I'm going to have to get to at some point.
Right.
And mining the resources, which on this map looks like it's going to be a pain in the ass because like the tungsten is on like this tiny island off to the side. So you're going to have to build like a land bridge over there to even get to it.
Hmm.
And I don't remember where the other one, aluminium, is, the bauxite. I think that was just in the middle of the island, so that might not be so bad.
So what's the state of this game? Is it still early access, technically? Or is this just a patch on a...
No, I think this is just a regular post-release update patch. Mm.
Seems like they're changing a fair number of fundamentals still.
I mean, that's not that unusual, I guess, but yeah. I'm pretty sure it's not early access. So yeah, that's Caption of Industry. I expect I'll continue playing it for the next 2 weeks until the Switch comes out.
That has been on my mind, like about like what should I realistically be playing right now?
You should finish a Avowed is apparently the answer.
Well, yes,
get that done.
Yeah, and I think I probably will. Well, I hope I will. The next depends what the fifth area is like, but.
But also, on the flip side of that, I guess, like, how much time is Mario Kart really going to occupy?
Yeah, sure. I mean, a bit of me is still early access.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to be one I'm necessarily going to sit down and play for hours and hours and hours at a time, right? I think
maybe once, hours and hours and hours, and then...
Yeah, maybe. Well, that's okay. Like, I don't really necessarily have a particularly short time game on the go at the moment. Sure. So that would be nice to fill that niche.
I mean, Mario Kart is, I don't know, medium intensity in terms of like gameplay stress.
Yeah, I may have already made a mistake, which we'll get to in a moment, sort of talking about how I spend my time.
Mistake?
So, yeah.
Well. You can talk about that because I'm done.
Talk about it now.
Yeah, so I might have started Clair Obscur Expedition 33
for some reason,
which is chunky, right? That game's not short, and I'm not super far in. I'm only like a few hours in at this point, but like maybe two, maybe three, something like that. But I am kind of loving it. At the moment, right?
And more reason you need to finish about then,
yeah.
Before it kills that off.
But this is what I mean. I don't have enough exposure to it. It hasn't exposed enough of itself yet for me to. There's plenty more tricks up its sleeve. At the moment, I've only got two party members at the moment, right? That kind of stuff. So there's loads of people still to find. There's loads of there's plenty of systems I'm getting items for that I don't know how to engage with, you know, I'm at that stage with the game. But so everything I'm about to say is vibe based.
So start from the beginning. Cause I can't even remember what
right.
kind of game
so,
it is.
So Clair Obscur, L'Expedition 33, as I suppose is its proper name, but yeah, Expedition 33. It is a turn-based RPG.
That's right. Okay.
It's pretty JRPG style, actually, but it's French, and it's very French. Really,
I mean, if you're going to be French, you might as well go all in.
It's very
French.
Yeah. I mean, all the characters are kind of like French names, and they even though the voice acting is, you know, English, traditional English, like it's you know, everyone's names like Gustave and Mayel and Catherine. They don't say Catherine; they say Catherine. And then there's a Sophie, but you know, there's a French tint to everything. Like
is it actually like said in France, or is this just
kinda
like, okay?
Kinda. So but I don't really get a sense of what the world is, and that's probably intentional, right? That's probably going to be it's one of the big mysteries. So for those of you that haven't seen any other build-up trailers or anything like that to this game, its whole thing is that you're in a world that has been broken by an event called the Fracture, and that has created, as far as we know, we are... the humanity is in this little pocket, this city that looks an awful lot like Paris.
Has survived the Death Stranding.
Has survived, yeah, because they managed to put some kind of shield bubble basically around themselves to stop bad guys coming in.
They attached the Tesla troopers to the Eiffel Tower.
I think it is Paris because it's like there's. I think I've seen a screenshot. This is probably a spoiler, like somewhere online of what looks like a kind of melty Eiffel Tower somewhere. But I'm not sure I saw that particularly. I probably did if I looked at the sky. I don't know.
Looked at the skybox.
Yeah, maybe. But I can't remember. But like the town, it's all a bit weird, right? So it's like a Parisian city, but there's plenty of this like glass, like crystal structure around the place. Bits are kind of floating weirdly in the air. And the game kind of just drops you into the city, not really explaining itself. Like, it's like, yeah, the things are just like this. And the love of your life, who you haven't seen for a few years because you broke up, is going to Gommage soon.
Gommage, mon ami.
And what that means is far off at sea, there is a monument with a number on it. And every year, the Paintress, this mysterious, massive being, reduces that number. And when that happens, everyone of that age disappears, Thanos style.
So it's kind of Logan's Run situation.
Kinda, yeah. Everyone's aware. Oh no, which is Logan? Logan's Run. They're not aware that they're being like recycled, right?
I think they kind of are, though, aren't they?
They were going for to the renew, but I didn't know that it was like killing them or something.
Go up in the weird carousel or whatever.
Whereas here, they're sort of like dissolving, pretty much like Thanos's snap, right? Which means the population is rapidly decreasing in age and just decreasing in general, and the knowledge of the elders is being lost all the time and stuff like that. So there's the Gommage is like a festival. It'll be like, oh, this is just a thing. Alongside it, the expeditions, which are numbered after the number on the monument, are trying to go to the monument to defeat the Paintress and stop this from happening before it gets to a point where, you know, no one can sustain themselves because there'll only be like 1 year olds left or whatever. And it's like, and everything's boned. And so in starts the story. I would say it's unlike a lot of RPGs. It has quite a long build up, like because it just puts you in the city. There's this it takes you a while before you actually get into the meat of it. It doesn't do the sort of like, I guess, what is a bit tropey for Final Fantasy games, where it's just like has to start with some big thing already in action.
Apart from the whole situation of this game, obviously.
but it's an ongoing situation. It's not like it starts in a fight,
right?
Or some. Which, like most Final Fantasies do, right? There's some battle happening, and it's like, here you go, just chuck yourself in. So you're just sort of like to calm your nerves before you talk to your love of your life, for instance, like your friend Maya, like asks you to duel because you've been training for the expedition, right? So it's just like, this calms you down. Let's do this. So that's where the tutorial comes in and stuff like that. Naturally, when the expedition actually begins, it all goes bad, as you might expect, and it goes from there. But it's and the mysteries start to unfold. But it's given me old school Final Fantasy vibes in the best possible way. Like it feels like Final Fantasy used to feel in its setup and its. Even if that the structure of the intro is a little bit different, it's still I almost feel like it's more akin to Final Fantasy X more than anything else, which might be a slightly strange pull. Sort of just when they were on the edge of perhaps transitioning to different gameplay styles, right? And they were but they had the technical prowess to perhaps do some of the cutscene-y stuff that they wanted to do and things like that. It feels like it's kind of at that point. I mean, it looks good. I'm playing it in quality mode, which I don't normally do, so I'm accepting that sort of 30 FPS cut for some fidelity. I don't really know if I could see too much of a difference if I run it in performance mode, but there's a bit of me that's just like, yeah, but this kind of, it's playing on my nostalgia a bit, putting it in this 30 FPS mode. The combat's pretty cool, actually. So it's turn-based with a timeline down the left-hand side, like, so I guess, again, quite Final Fantasy X-y, but the characters all behave kind of different to each other, as far as I can tell. Like, Gustav seems to be more of a traditional character, but the next character you find and get to play with has a sort of, like, an accumulation mechanic where the skills you use build up stains of a color in this case, and then you use that color to buff other skills that you're using, so you want to be rotating your skills to get the most out of it. It feels like it's like trying to make characters feel distinct and not just statistically distinct, right? Which is I guess a problem with a lot of JRPGs. They're trying to
old
give them
fuzzy jobs, basically.
Kind of, yeah. They are trying to give them mechanical differences, which I appreciate. But yeah, I think the presentation's been good. I like the musical take on it. It is orchestral, but it's got a bit of that ethereal nature to it. There's a tone to the world that is probably somewhere between X and 13, as I mentioned before, in Final Fantasy, which I like. They kind of don't make games like this anymore, and at least not to this quality level. And I think that's why I'm being drawn in. And I think they're doing it's a real good job. That intro sequence is like, it's not Last of Us Part One level, but it's it did manage to deliver a little bit of a gut wrench, even though you knew exactly what was coming, or you could figure out what was coming if you weren't aware of the game. It's like, even if they knew what was coming and all that, it still kind of landed. You know, it managed to make that sit. I don't know. I'm pretty excited to play more. As I said, super early, but as I think Kotaku said, it's got the juice. It feels good.
And is the juice worth the squeeze?
let's squeeze those characters.
Squeeze. I know.
Come here.
It sounds a teensy bit depressing in terms of.
Oh yeah, no, it is. It's pretty dark, but it's not been a happy tale thus far.
No. Okay.
The monument is over the sea. Does that mean it's going to be in England?
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if that's what it is. It's like, damn English. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Anyway, I'm still, maybe somewhat foolishly just started.
Yeah, really foolishly.
Yeah, I don't really know. I just kind of felt like it. Like, because I did kind of also start the very beginning of Spyro 3. just to see. I forget what this was, Year of the Dragon, I think it is. They're mixing it up a little bit, as in it's not just Spyro you control now. There are other characters to find, and there will be sections where you play as them. The first one you find is a kangaroo, so lots of big jumps, lots of vertical jumping anyway, and kicking. No fire.
It's just Banjo-Kazooie transformations, but with different characters.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. It's Donkey Kong 64.
Yep. Jump in a barrel.
Is it not quite like that? Because the areas you go into, like they're like, you can't go in there with every character, yeah, right? It's
specific.
This zone is for this person.
Puzzles, basically.
Yeah. No, I've only played a little bit of that. There's nothing really to talk about it. It seems more of the same. Like exactly, almost pretty much exactly the same, just with that one little extra wrinkle. What else have we got? Still plugging away at New Star GP. I still think that's a very good game, but I don't really have much more to say on it. It's just a solid semi arcade racer. That's pretty cool. That's pretty much all I'm doing at the moment. I did drift into Forza Horizon 4 again. That's what I mean. I'm sort of all over the place at the moment. I'm not really landing on much because, like, not in front of my TV anyway, I guess. Mm. It's like on my PC, I'm playing Avowed. If I need to do some, if I want to sit down on the couch and do something, I haven't really got a go-to at the moment.
That's why you need to not be doing all these things, because then Mario Kart's going to arrive.
Because Mario Kart's going to be that. Yeah, I know.
You can play more Balatro or something. Yeah. That would be a good way to occupy plenty of time on the TV.
Yeah, perhaps. I think that's what I've been doing. Anyway, there's probably something else. Oh yeah, I went to Forza Horizon. I'm playing Fortune Island, that DLC pack, and just just cracking through that, or at least doing some of the mainline stuff in it, until I get to the showcase events for it, and then I'll probably stop. And if I wanted to play more cars, I'll do the Lego bit of Forza Horizon 4.
You're gonna have plenty of cars, surely.
Marzi calls them cars anyway.
Yes, they're all cars currently.
Car. He does see, like, when if I've got everyone got YouTube up on the TV, and he's like a Mario Kart thumbnail comes up, he does immediately point to it and be like, car. Something about the Mario's cart, like, really stands right out. Even if there's a picture of an actual car next to it, like in a car review and a thumbnail next to it, no, he's drawn to Mario in his car. He knows.
I mean, he knows.
That's good design.
Who isn't? That's good design.
Unlike real cars, which are obviously bad design.
On the other hand, though, who picks Mario in Mario Kart?
I don't know, I quite like him in Mario 64.
Sure.
He's quite a safe choice in Mario 64.
Start with Mario, as always.
Yeah. Start with Mario, yeah, sure.
Do you reckon they'll do like an intro sequence? Like a
Horizon. Into the world, probably.
Yeah, like Horizon does, where it's just like, here's the game, and slow pan out to the world to finish.
Yeah, it's probably just going to put you in like a little mini free roam thing. Like, drive from here to this shining point, and then zoom out to the overview,
and and boom, title screen.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as no one's asking me to upload anything to YouTube, like, or social media, or call me superstar constantly.
What would the
jump up superstar? I realize that's a problem. Exactly. There.
What would the social network of the Mushroom Kingdom be called?
Mushbook.
Spawnet.
I'm trying to think of something that sounds a bit like Twitter, but I haven't got one. Like, Sheller. I don't know.
Yeah.
It'd just be Coop R. Would that be the Cooper's dating network? Yes. Coop R.
Well, obviously, there's going to have to be the evil one as well for all the Bowser's minions. Like the evil version of... Well, I was about to say the evil version of Twitter, but Twitter is the evil version of Twitter.
Bowser. It's true.
Bowsergram.
No, it'd have to be something to do with Kamek, right? The Magic Koopa. That'd be...
Kek-cock. I don't know.
I did see a couple more, like
Gad Tube.
Gad. Yes, that's it. That would be it. It would be something EGAD, right?
EGAD. Yeah, it's true.
But you'd have to come up with something slightly funnier than Gad Tube. Not necessarily funnier. Better. Like the Poltergeist.
Something a bit more punny.
Yeah. I did see a couple more YouTube thumbnails of various things to do with Mario Kart that obviously I didn't look at apart from the thumbnail, but like, one thing that I somehow haven't seen people talking about, which is maybe good because maybe this is something I don't want to get spoiled, possibly even, but like, when the bits that I've seen of like the character select screen and everything, there's like a sub-select thing for, I don't know, what, like, the sponsor of your cart, I guess?
Oh. Huh. Because
it goes on, like, the side of the... On, like, Mario's cart, it has, like, the little one-up icon thing.
Is that just a livery choice?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. But it's so, it doesn't change enough that I feel like it would be an entire livery thing.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like... It's
just the sticker.
Yeah, it looks like it's very specifically designed to be, like, a decal that fits in this one slot on, like, the different cart designs. Mm. It's like, what does that do?
Yeah, what's that for?
Maybe I don't want to know.
Well, you don't, not now.
No.
I
mean, you know, I would imagine that it could be something along the lines of a passive buff, right? Choose your sponsor for, like, this sponsor gives you 10% faster boosts or 20% better cornering or something. I don't know. Just, like, an extra buff stacked on top of the character stats or whatever.
Buffs on buffs on buffs.
And then I saw other thumbnails where it was like, the one thing that Mario Kart World needs is the ability to just set up races anywhere. And it's like, yes, that's obvious. But are they going to do that? I wouldn't doubt it.
Sure, like a ribbon course designer thing, like go to this junction, go to this junction.
Yeah, I mean, if the map is
like MSR's street, course maker.
If the map is fully interconnected as it seems like they've shown it is, then you should just be able to be like here, and then it just sets up the checkpoints on the road,
and then do this track if that's to be believed, like that thing's part of it.
But
go here, do a lap of this track, come out, go to this other one, do the entire map in one.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even in the context of, like, customizable, but surely that's got to be, like, the last secret tier of race, right? There's got to be the knockout tour, but it goes around the entire edge of the map.
Yeah. Because that's what, those are the, like, what the end game Forza Horizon ones are always like, right?
Yeah.
The big courses. Titan or something to that effect.
We get ready for a lot of Mario Kart next time, hopefully. Well, is it next time?
No, I think it's two more times.
Oh.
Right.
Oh, we're just gonna miss it.
It's the week after the next 3 weeks, one else.
Isn't it? It's not 2 weeks, but it's getting closer.
Yeah, you're right. It'll be a couple days before launch when the next podcast goes out,
so that will give us an entire 2 weeks to deal with any shipping problems. I mean, no indication so far on my Amazon order that anything changed.
I mean, I know what's going to happen. We're going to sit down and be all like, right, who's ready to talk about Fast Fusion?
And that's what, like, you're going to do.
Like, no, I haven't played Mario Kart. Look. And then Dan will be like, no, I played Tears of the Kingdom at 60 FPS. I haven't played
Mario Kart. Well, that too. I mean, that'll at least be...
That's the plan.
Yeah. That'll at least be Dan playing more Tears of the Kingdom. That's still fine. Did you manage to do any of that this week?
No, I was playing Astro Bot this week.
Oh, right, yes, of course.
Yeah, I'm going to be playing Tears of the Kingdom in high definition in a few weeks.
Same reason that I've been trying not to accidentally start playing it again.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I will be playing it. I don't think I'm that far from the end of Tears of the Kingdom, so it will just be a wrap-up, really. But there's a lot of, like I said, like a lot of combat stuff on my...
Yeah. And with 60 FPS, you'll be even better at dodging.
Maybe slightly easier, maybe, fighting these massive fucking Lynels and Gleox and... I don't think I fought a Gleok. They're too scary.
Yeah, I fought a few of those. I haven't done too many of the Lynel fights in this. But...
I get the sense that you're supposed to use the Zonai stuff. Like, I haven't got all of the laser beams and shit unlocked, I don't think.
I mean, you can kind of, I guess. If you, it's like
build a contraption,
The trouble with that is finding out how the cheese works.
How does the cheese work?
You could just attach together 30 lasers and then just hold it up and just point it at the enemy.
But then can it be destroyed if the enemy just walks into it?
Well, not if you're holding it.
Well, yeah, then you got to dodge somehow.
Well, not if you're behind it to absorb all the fire. Although, of course, the problem with having 30 lasers is you need some battery as well. If your battery isn't big enough, you're not going to be able to sustain that for very long.
Yeah. Or build one of those, I don't even know how you do it, but like the people have just been building like attack drones and things like that, sort of hover around firing stuff.
Well, I mean, they do give you a couple of examples of that where it's using like the levitating platform and it has like basically a single use rocket on it. So when you deploy it, it flies up from the rocket, but then the hover platform keeps it there and it just has guns or whatever on it. It's like Nintendo does actually give you that as a concept in the game.
Yeah, really? Maybe I haven't found that one.
I think they also use that for water, because obviously when you're fighting the gunk boss, if you want to spread water around, put it high up and then just have it spin or something.
Interesting. Wasn't even a thought to me.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's like you can use these fancy devices or you can just fight this boss the normal way.
Right. Maybe I'll just go the standard way. I don't know. I'm not like... All the bits where you're supposed to use the Zonai devices heavily like that, and like I guess the depths are for Zonai devices, kind of. Yeah. I'm guessing you spent like 100 hours in the depths, Zach.
Well, not really.
I haven't spent much time down there.
It's one of those things where when you get into the depths, it's like, because those, like the Zonai device stations down there don't necessarily always have everything, they have like a different selection. It's like you find kind of the minimum thing that you just build every time and then just never experiment after that, because it's like, this is the one thing I can build regardless of which one of these I turn up at.
There it is.
We were wondering at what point in the podcast we were going to be interrupted by loud vehicles outside Rob's window,
but the cycle isn't in Tears of the Kingdom. That was a Breath of the Wild thing.
That was a Breath of the Wild DLC, which you'll only get if you bought it the first time around. Anyway.
You can get the fake Master Cycle in Tears of the Kingdom. There's a Zonai device design that's meant to imitate it, but it doesn't, obviously not as cool. Or as functional. Because as much as Zonai devices are going to try, it's never going to be able to really manage a bike.
Or as weird as it was in Hyrule Warriors.
No.
Yeah. Well, I got through most of the worlds of Astro Bot, so I'll see what that, maybe by next time, certainly by the time the Switch 2 time comes out, I'll make sure to have seen what the end of that looks like.
I hear it's quite a satisfying ending.
Oh, I hope so, yeah. I put most of the parts back into the PlayStation 5, so it's mostly come back together. It is cool, like, every time you finish, like, a hub world or whatever, there's, like, five of them or whatever, you put a big part back into the PS5, and there's, like, a bespoke sequence where you're using robot arms and using every feature, basically, of the controllers, from gyro to, like, HD rumble to, like, all kinds of stuff to just, like... sort of, I don't know, hammer things and saw things and shove things into slots or whatever. It's kind of cool. It's kind of a weird thing because it doesn't really impact the rest of the game, but it's just a fun thing.
Just a fun little sequence, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Fun sequence every time, which is quite cool.
A WarioWare mini
game. Yeah, exactly. It's very slick, I must say, but I still feel like, even though... it doesn't feel vague at all, because it's like 60 frames per second and everything, and you can quite precisely control where the character's going. It just doesn't feel as expressive in his movements, even close to like a Mario.
Right, yeah.
There's not as much weight to the guy, and the moveset is, limited. It's quite limited, and then every level gives you a different mechanic to use or whatever, rather than having the whole tool set at all times,
Yeah, it's gimmicky, but in a good way.
Like, they're all well executed, so I don't mind. And
I didn't mean I didn't mean that in the shade sort of shade way that gimmicky, I guess, can often be used. But that is sort of the structure, right?
I'd say so. It's cool. It doesn't feel. It's not like too light, like as a game, but it is on the lighter side. But yeah, it's very slick. It's cool. Recommend.
Nice.
All right, I think that's what we've been playing. What else is going on? We've been playing Star Fox, I guess.
We sure have.
Still.
too much, like replaying bits of Star Fox.
Yeah, hopefully we can get past the crashing and save file problems.
Save file problems.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to do the edit for that one. I'll figure a way around that. It'll probably just, it won't be as seamless like last time. It'll be like, there'll be a slight interruption, but you won't see all of the replay.
Right. You might get the occasional seam, but yeah, you can watch us playing Star Fox Adventures currently on YouTube. Happy Salad is our channel. Which makes sense, right?
Makes sense.
The thing is, that's our brand, and this is the Saladcast. So check that out on YouTube, and then we'll be back here with another podcast like this one in 2 weeks' time. Not in time for the Switch 2, but in time for lots of other good stuff. More Claire Obscure stuff.
In time for us to perhaps know if we're even getting our Switch 2s.
Yeah, we'll find out if we're actually going to get them. So we'll catch you then. Bye.